everyone, and welcome to the Defender of Caregivers podcast. Our topic today is time to benefit. My name is Lon Kiefer, your host, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I'm known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and my expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and advocating for pro-per relationships between professional and personal family caregivers, absent of the caregiving flag of fear, loathing, anger, and guilt. Today's "you might be a caregiver if" statement is, drumroll please, boom. You might be a caregiver if you resist change because your routines allow you to embrace others. Hey folks, let's face it. Once you're in the caregiver role, whether you chose it or it chose you, it's tough to change the course you're on because you feel guilty if you don't continue with the commitments you've accepted, or you feel guilty if you have someone else do things that you feel you should do yourself. We're not very good to ourselves sometimes, and you've heard me say Myers-Briggs in previous podcasts. Myers-Briggs says that caregivers take satisfaction in serving others, and I want to talk for a minute about what the word satisfaction means in using it in that way. Satisfaction is not like in football, spiking the football and saying, "Hey, look at me," and you know, raising your hands for everybody around to cheer and give you praise and acknowledgement for your accomplishment. It's not like that at all. Satisfaction is much more subtle. It might just be in feeling relieved that you didn't fail to, you know, fulfill a commitment that you made, or that you don't have the guilt and the angst of an outcome that you feel you should have avoided. So sometimes satisfaction, or in the words of Myers-Briggs, pleasure and satisfaction, isn't really necessarily a sense of pride or accomplishments. It's an avoidance of pain. They become the same thing. So true pleasure and an avoidance of pain become the same thing in the caregiver's world. So today we're going to talk about a concept called time to benefit. And I want to start it in a weird way. I want to talk about my day. Well, hey, everything I do, I talk about my experiences either personally or with others to try and draw analogies and use of parables to step into the caregiver world. But this morning, I was being a little bit selfish. Hey, I want to brag for a minute. I'm a grandfather for the first time. My granddaughter, Addison Taylor Kiefer, was born on May 14th. That's about 2.5 weeks ago. And in those 2.5 weeks, or actually less, because I have not been there in... Anyway, what am I trying to say? In about an 11 to 12 day period, I drove over 4,000 miles. Because when you have a baby, you don't know when you're going to have a baby. And none of us in our lives here in the Baltimore, Delaware area, which was my son's extended family, you know, my son's family, he lives in Jacksonville, Florida now. You know, none of us could go down there and hang out for, you know, a week or two hoping to be there when the baby was born. So we were left to, you know, go down when the baby was born. This all has to do with time and the time to benefit. We couldn't afford to take the time to go down there for a week and not get the benefit of being there when the baby was born. So people were asking me for months, when are you going to go to Florida? I'm like, I don't know. Tell me when the baby's going to be born, and then I'll tell you when I'm going to go to Florida. So while flights are affordable if you do them a month in advance, they're prohibitively expensive if you do it a few days in advance. And add to that the fact that we had two or three people that wanted to go down at any given moment, driving was the better answer. So we fired up the Doc Mobile. We got my ride or die companion, Chance the Wonder Dog. And we went down. There were three of us on each trip. And, you know, it ended up being fun. But I've driven, you know, from the Baltimore, Delaware area down to Jacksonville and back twice in about an 11, 12 day period. And then my daughter, she also moved from Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky, where she finished her doctorate in audiology, to live about 15 minutes away from my son in Jacksonville as she starts a one-year externship at First Coast Audiology. But she missed the baby's birth. She moved there about 4 days after. So I went down to see the baby and spend 2 days with my son and his growing family. Drove all the way back, worked 3 or 4 days, then drove all the way back down with my mom to see her great-granddaughter and to help my daughter move into her new apartment. And so it's been a whirlwind, and I just don't have enough time to be everywhere and every place. And here I am for the first time home, as I call it, at an ugly house on a beautiful river and relaxed. And I just wanted to stay relaxed, but I had been invited to go to breakfast this morning, and I was socked in, chances on my lap, I was reading, I was feeling really good, drinking a cup of coffee, and I knew this invite, the invitation had been extended last night, and I said I would go, but I was regretting it, to be honest with you. I was trying to get out of it, I was trying to do my thing rather than somebody else's thing, but then I reminded myself that we were supposed to be going to breakfast with a gentleman that I've been talking to over the last week or two, supporting him in his caregiver role. This is a successful businessman. And when I went there, when I went to breakfast, I did not think I was going to meet a nature caregiver. I thought I was going to meet a nurture caregiver. Now, the difference, if you've heard me speak before, is a nature caregiver is someone that when there's an opportunity to care for other people, they step into it. It's in their nature. They're born to the role. A nurture caregiver is someone that was born with an E on the end of it by accepting a burden or responsibility. They don't necessarily want the role, but they find themselves in it. And that's how I was initially going to describe this gentleman. Several years back, he was asked an innocent question by an acquaintance. Hey, we don't have any children. My wife and I would like you to be an executor of our will. Would you do that? He said, sure. You know, that's kind of a business-like thing, but it can get emotional and what have you. But he said yes. And then sometime later, about a year ago, they came back and said, hey, we have another favor to ask. Will you also be durable power of attorney for medical decision-making and financial concerns? And he said, sure, why not? Well, he's now living with it. He's got a, they're in their mid-80s. I'm going to be a little bit vague here because I don't want people to figure out who I'm talking about. The gentleman has multiple medical issues. The professional side would call it comorbidities, where what happens when you have that is that if you're dealing with one diagnosis and you want to do medication or intervention to treat that illness, you're causing complications with another one. You know, an example would be if somebody has, you know, an infection or something like that, and you want to start an IV to treat that infection, but they also have congestive heart failure. The fluids that you need to inject to treat the infection are going to make the congestive heart failure more difficult, and then when they go into fluid overload, they may end up having renal failure, and it just can become a vicious cycle. So this gentleman is in his 80s, and his health is declining, and his wife, who's very healthy, has some early signs of dementia, and while she's safe, she can even drive places and still cook and clean and, you know, take care of those type of things. She doesn't realize that she has medicated him earlier in the day, so we'll double medicate him or what have you. So my friend, this who I thought was not a nature caregiver, I thought he was a nurture caregiver. He was thrown into the role, nurtured into it by his environment, is dealing with this. And he's struggling quite a bit, and I've been talking with him over the phone, and I remembered we're supposed to go to breakfast with him, so I said yes to breakfast. Now, I didn't start this very well, but even that was a time to benefit decision. You know, I'm tired. I wanted to rest. I really thought I needed some me time, some alone time to rest. I knew I wanted to do a podcast today. I didn't think my time was well spent going to breakfast. Plus, I'm trying to do this thing intermittent fasting where I eat in short periods of time, limited periods of time throughout the day. And I try not to eat carbohydrates, but I'm a sucker for breakfast, but that's, you know. So I end up having French toast, scrapple, and eggs, and giving up my alone time to rest By going out to breakfast with a good friend and this third-party acquaintance who is in the caregiver role. And I just decided that at that point I had to do what was good for all, and more people would benefit from going out than staying home. So even that is a time-to-benefit decision. You know, the time I'm going to spend on this, what benefit will I get out of it? What decision will I make? And I decided to go to breakfast, and I'm glad that I did. So the concept of time to benefit, let me deviate and give you the specific article that I want to talk about here and why I want to talk about it. It's an article, the title is Individualizing Prevention for Older Adults. It's written by C, I hope I'm pronouncing S-E-I, the first name correctly, C.J. Lee, a doctor, and Christine Kim, a nurse. And they talk about time to benefit of an intervention versus life expectancy. Now, for those of you that are listening and they're hearing the term in their mind, rationing, this is not rationing. Rationing is where you view a medical intervention or a medical resource from a monetary or a just physical capability. We can only do so many of these procedures, or we can only pay for so many of these procedures, so we're going to restrict that intervention for the younger, stronger, healthier people and not give them to people with less of a lifespan. That's not what we're talking about here. For this conversation today, let's assume that finances and resources are unlimited. And on the flip side of it, let's also assume that there is no such thing as defensive medicine, that we're not worried about lawsuits or anything like that. This is a pure conversation of what is the time to benefit of an intervention versus the life expectancy of the individual. The reason that I bring this up is both in a personal way and for myself and with this gentleman that I had breakfast with, this is relevant. And in another way, it's relevant professionally. When you're talking about time, you can sit on a park bench with someone, and for you, you can be bored and distracted, and you want to be doing something else, and it feels like you're there forever. That would probably be the men in the world. Let's just be a sexist here and say you're sitting there with your girlfriend or your spouse, or maybe even just your daughter, and women tend to look at things differently. They might be sitting there enjoying the time together out in nature, and the time seems to fly by. Time is very personal and very individualized, but it is a limited resource, and it should be spent wisely. In my play, Defending the Caregiver, man, I'm jumping all over the place. What you don't know in this podcast, because time is irrelevant in a podcast other than the length of the podcast, you can listen to a podcast on any platform, anywhere, at any time, and you don't have to listen to them in sequence. So you don't know this unless you're hearing it now. This is the first podcast I've done in quite some time. It's no surprise to anybody that's listened to other podcasts or other things that I've done that I've struggled with, if you want to have it, the brand, Defender of Caregivers. It's more of a philosophy for me, but it's also a brand. And what it is me sharing the insight of a caregiver personality to the benefit of the caregiver. I'm trying to get the personal family caregivers to understand that they're inviting themselves into guilt in a no-win scenario if they don't understand and embrace why they do certain things and why they protect routines when they perhaps should or could consider changing them. And on the professional side of things, if they don't embrace the fact that they too are caregivers and have caregiver personality traits that are similar to the people they serve, they'll be stuck in this role of a silent war where they're essentially competing with the personal family caregivers for how we do things. And the middle in between and together is the better avenue. So many decisions in healthcare are better either never made and deferred and ignored intentionally or made earlier. Few things in healthcare get better with time from an intervention standpoint, and particularly when it comes to getting assistance in caring for a loved one. So the reason this podcast has been I haven't done one in quite some time, is because while I've enjoyed great success in some ways with Defender of Caregivers, I've also failed miserably in others. For example, I'll be hired to do a keynote at a national conference and paid very well to do it and get a lot of accolades and a lot of attention, but I still feel kind of empty because I'm up there relying on my gifts, and I thank God for them, as a speaker, particularly as a humor-based speaker with a relevant topic. But I'm not really hitting the nail on the head of what I'm trying to do, which is forge these relationships. So, and the other piece of it is that I am speaking to personal family caregivers sometimes, but I'm paid for when I'm on the platform by professional caregivers, and I haven't figured out how to bring all of them together in the best means possible. But then again, I have, and I've been working on that in the background. I have a play that I do called Defending the Caregiver, and it is intentionally for not-for-profit fundraisers or small venue healthcare settings where I can bring this all home, where family, personal family caregivers and professional family caregivers can learn about the caregiver personality and how to have these conversations in the most suitable way. But while I was struggling to figure this out again, I was getting very tired traveling and that sort of thing. So I made a decision to retool myself and retool the brand. And I was given an opportunity to help rescue a nursing home that needed some restructuring. And the way that the invitation came was that, Lon, we've heard you speak, we know what you do, and we want you to continue doing it, and we want you to prove to us that it works by helping us turn around our nursing home. And you can take time off when you need to. You don't need to be afraid or shy about your brand and what you do. We embrace it. So that was very attractive to me, and I stepped in, and frankly, I've been spending a tremendous amount of time implementing the Defender of Caregivers philosophy into this nursing home. And our satisfaction scores are going up, our turnover in staffing is going down, the occupancy is going up, the financial metrics and performance is going up. I mean, this stuff works, and I'm very proud of it. The other piece that's going on is that I'm working on finally truly professionalizing and promoting Defending the Caregiver with a book that goes along with the play. And so that's how I've been spending my time of late, to get the benefit of helping my message to be more easily understood. So we haven't done a podcast in quite a while, and the reason that I've stepped back into it is that I've been having these conversations of late, and it is just so heartwarming as to why we're having these conversations. The article Individualizing Prevention for Older Adults, as I said earlier, talks about the time to benefit and compares it to the life expectancy of individuals. Now, this is profound. It's profound for me from a scene in the play that I'm going to tell you about now, and it's profound for this gentleman that I had breakfast with this morning, because there are so many facets at play, parts of the personality and parts of the medical legal system that sometimes encourage us to do procedures and interventions with no real benefit other than they feel good or they put us at ease. So as I dig deeper into the actual topic of time to benefit and individualizing prevention for older adults, let me share with you today's caregiver distortion. It's caregiver distortion number 7, emotional reasoning. You assume that your negative emotions necessarily reflect the way things really are. I feel it, therefore it must be true. So in this trap, in this distorted thinking process, the more you feel something, the more you believe it to be valid and factual, and that's not necessarily the case. We do things all the time because we feel we should do them, but the question is there benefit for it? In the play Defending the Caregiver, I get a phone call, it's in the book as well, I get a phone call in the middle of the night. I just returned from seeing my father, who is on his deathbed, and the doctor calls me and he says, Mr. Kiefer, if we don't take one or two of the following interventions. Your father's going to die. His death is imminent. What would you like us to do? Well, first of all, when you get that phone call, nobody's calling you to make a decision. The decision has already been made by the medical gods of fate. What they're calling you for is, it's really an emotional reasoning process, an invitation to guilt, looking for somebody to accept it. That's a moment for you to sit there and feel responsible for that decision, which has already been made. And what I would implore people to do is to try and make that decision without emotion. That, no, we made this decision in a practical way, and I'm going to stay in a practical mode when I say, no, we don't, the family doesn't want, nor does my father want any more intervention. But here's why it's so difficult, aside from the fact that you're losing a loved one. It's so difficult because you're in a pro-per relationship, a professional-personal relationship. And while you're sitting in bed dealing with that, the doctor's on the other line and they're dealing with it professionally too. And they may not have all of their perspective appropriate, in perspective. They may be suffering from emotional reasoning as well. The very people that pursue the profession of physician or nurse or social worker or what have you are caregiver personalities in most cases, and they tend to be cheerleaders. They want the best for the people they're caring for, so they tend to stay in a positive type of mode where, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make this better. Hey, this is what we're going to do this time. And it's hard for them to have the difficult discussions of blunt reality when there's just not time. Here's what the doctor said to me: Mr. Kiefer, if we don't take this intervention, your father is going to pass away very shortly. And let me remind you, this is the key. Your father's cancer is curable. In fact, it's one of the more curable forms of cancer that we have out there, and there are effective interventions. The problem is your father is out of time. You know, your father will not survive the treatment. He may not live long enough to benefit from the intervention. So that's a time to benefit discussion that we're having on the deathbed. Now, what I want to point out is that there's opportunities to have time to benefit discussions much earlier in the process. And that's my real goal here, is to have these conversations and to have them as much as possible without guilt. So let's flash forward to this morning's breakfast, where I'm having this conversation with this gentleman, and you know, he goes from, hey, will you be my estate planner, to will you be my fiduciary for medical decision making and finances. So he finds himself in this trap of commitment with this elderly couple, and they're going for a million different tests. The doctors are still recommending everything, and the gentleman who is failing medically is still very cognitively intact, and he's afraid to die. So he's saying, yes, let's take these tests. The wife, who has been doting on him her entire life and is not fully capable of decision making, is unable to really rationally have a discussion with him. And the physician, who's an old school physician that maybe has medical legal concerns and has been a cheerleader for this man for a long time, really has not directly addressed with him that he's dying, and it has become a real challenge for my friend to step in there, because he's looking at everything rationally. He's not emotionally caught up in it. He is, but he doesn't have a 30-year, 40-year relationship, physician-to-client relationship. He's not a spouse. He's not a sibling or a child of these folks. So he comes at this, and he's a first-class businessman. Their relationship was business. So he looks at this, and he says, Lon, I'm trying to make business decisions, but they're medical decisions. And I said, no, they're not necessarily two different things. If you're looking at it from a logical standpoint, you're saying this doesn't make sense. Unless somebody can absolutely, unequivocally debate and demonstrate to you the benefit of what you're doing, you're right to have that conversation and that thought. Furthermore, he's worried about their finances. He's worried about his fiduciary responsibility to protect what resources they have. And I said, well, what are those resources intended for? They're intended to meet your needs. They have no family. This isn't an issue of fraud or embezzlement. You're not, you know, what are you trying to protect? Those resources are for them at this stage in their life. And frankly, the resources are so limited that no matter what you do with those resources, the dollars, in order to preserve them, you have to invest your time, your energy, and your own well-being. And either way, by the end of a year, they're going to be out of financial resources. There's just not enough. If you have a problem that you have enough money to solve, you don't have a problem. But in this case, neither his time and effort nor their money was going to solve, or is, because it's a real situation, is going to solve this problem. There is financially no way out of this. Therefore, making the decision based entirely on the well-being of the individual is, there's two things. You know, you need to separate yourself from the emotional side of things and the practical side of things. And what is the benefit of the interventions? Because there is a cost of an intervention, and I don't mean financially. I mean, in the world of senior living, I've seen many, many, many bad things come out of somebody getting on a stretcher and being put in an ambulance for a medical procedure or for a test. And many times over the years, I've been saying, what is the benefit of this? Why are we doing this? And again, we're hypothetically putting ourselves in a world where we're not afraid to get sued, and we're not afraid to spend money. So this is not an equation of, is it worth the expense of the ambulance or the reimbursement for the procedure? It's really much more of, what is the benefit versus the potential harm? Is the time to benefit and the life expectancy of the individual such that this is a worthy thing to do? But we go back to the thing that was said to me, you know, this cancer is treatable, but your dad's not going to live long enough to benefit from the treatment. That sounds harsh. Instead, if we were to say things like, this test isn't going to help you live longer, or this test is more likely to hurt you than it is to help you, or this intervention for your dad really is not going to allow him to live longer. If we could take the cancer and treat it in a petri dish, yeah, we could treat the cancer, but we can't treat the cancer within your father. It's not going to make him live longer. That's a much more easy thing to understand. It's both more kind and less emotionally galvanizing. And I'm not faulting the doctor, but that's not what was said to me. And it's not what is being said to my breakfast companion this morning either. Procedures and interventions are being scheduled, and he's not sure what the benefit of them is, but he's the only one asking the question. Well, I'm here to tell you, more and more in the profession, the question is starting to be asked, and it's a wonderful question to be asked. And I won't go into the specific details, but there are charts and algorithms that help us understand what a life expectancy is. And there are also charts and algorithms that talk about what is the time to benefit of an intervention. But the cost of an intervention is that, you know, every surgery has its risks. Every transportation has its risks. So the real question is, you know, is it a benefit from a time standpoint or emotional standpoint for us to stay in the cheerleader mode where we feel that everything must be done? Instead, sometimes it's better to spend that same time or to take that risk. Would it not be more beneficial to all parties concerned to take the risk of a transportation, to do something on a bucket list that rather than an intervention? The bucket list is going to help our spirits. The intervention may not help our health. So anyway, that's today's podcast. I'm glad to be back. I hope to share more. I'm going to keep them to about 30 minutes this time around. And if you will with me, join me in the closing remarks of the caregiver's vow. Repeat after me. I'm proud of who and what I am. I'm a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. I will honor myself as I care for others. This is my solemn caregiver's vow. Okay, everybody, that's it for the podcast today. Find us on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Doc Defender. And Chance and I in the Docmobile will be coming around somewhere to a church, synagogue, senior living facility, or community center, bringing Defending of the Caregiver to your area. Soon, gotta run. Love you all. See you next time. Goodbye. And most of all, thank you for caring.